look at the topic of faith. Last week, Pastor Peter, he preached on hope. And if you're familiar with Scripture, you know that, that hope, faith, and love, those are kind of the three major aspects, I guess, of Christianity. And so with this topic of faith, I think, you know, we understand that faith is an important thing, right? The Scriptures make very clear that we're justified, we're saved by faith alone. And, you know, even, you know, the Scriptures do say that we are unable to please God apart from faith. And so faith is something that is of eternal significance. And so something so important, I would imagine, you know, at one point or another, we might have questions about faith, about, you know, what is faith? You know, what is it exactly? Is faith some kind of, you know, a way of thinking? Is it just a way of living? Is it something that we can measure? You know, is God looking for a certain amount of faith? Is it, you know, a tablespoon? Is it a gallon? Like, what's going on here? You know, does God not care about the quantity of faith? Maybe he cares about the quality of it. And, you know, if that's so, well, how do we measure that? And, you know, how do we know if our faith is good enough? And as we're, you know, asking these questions, as we're wondering, you know, how is faith to be lived out? What does it look like? What does it mean? You know, what's it good for? And as we think about, you know, all of these different questions, we begin to realize that faith is, you know, it's a complex issue, right? It's not something that we can wrap our minds around so easily. And, you know, as we're asking questions, we kind of begin to, you know, even kind of go in circles ourselves. Now, you know, as much as faith is complex, as much as there's a lot of nuance to it, as much as we, you know, in this life will be, you know, continually either growing or losing our faith, you know, at the same time, Jesus, he says very interesting things. He says things like, you know, if you don't have the faith of a child, you cannot enter into the kingdom of God. Right? And when we think about children, we understand that children are relatively simple. Right? They're not thinking about, I don't know, they're not thinking about physics. They're not thinking about, you know, existentialism and, you know, Kierkegaard. They're not thinking about those kinds of things. You know, my son, he's 16 months, and he essentially thinks about four different things, or four, you know, there's variations of it, but essentially it's, I'm hungry, I'm tired, I'm bored, or I pooed. Like, that's pretty much it. There's not that much that's going on beyond that. And, you know, this morning, my hope is that as we look at our passage, we can take this very complex issue of faith, this very important issue of faith, and begin to break it down into simpler pieces, into maybe more digestible parts. And so we'll be looking at four different phrases of faith. And, you know, no, those four phrases are not, I'm hungry, I'm tired, I'm bored, I pooed. But hopefully they'll be as simple as those things. They'll be as understandable as those phrases. So the first phrase of faith that we'll be looking at is, I need help. I need help. In verse 41, we read that a man named Jairus, who was a ruler of the synagogue, he comes to Jesus. Now, we know that throughout Jesus' ministry, the people who were most skeptical of him are the religious leaders. The Pharisees, the teachers of the law, these are the people who look at this guy and they're like, who is this? Who is this uneducated carpenter from Nazareth? And why should I listen to him? Right? These are the people who opposed Jesus. These are the people who are, you know, clamoring for his arrest and even his death. And so we understand that when someone like Jairus, a religious leader, you know, comes to Jesus, the fact that he approaches him at all, it tells us that this guy is desperate. He's run out of options, that he's going to go, you know, to this unknown peasant from Nazareth. And as we, you know, continue to read, we recognize that he is indeed desperate. His only daughter is dying, his only child. And so he comes to Jesus. He falls
in front of him. He kneels before him and he begs. He begs, "Will you come with me? I have no other options." As Jesus follows Jairus to his house, we are introduced to another person. In verse 43, we meet a woman who had a discharge of blood for 12 years. And though she spent all of her money to, you know, spending it on doctors and, you know, trying to, you know, find any way possible to be healed of this terrible ailment, she couldn't be healed. And so according to the law of her people, according to the law of Israel, the Levitical law, she was considered unclean. And this is a big deal. It's not, you know, oh, well, you didn't take a shower this morning, and so we're going to keep a certain radius away from you, and, you know, later on we can be friends. You know, she was a religious and social outcast. The odds are this woman was married young. Israelites and, you know, just people in the ancient Near East, they were married around 12, 13. And so odds are she had a husband, and she was separated from him. It's possible that she had children, and she would have been torn away from them. This woman is utterly alone. She has been forsaken by her community and by her family. And for all she can tell, she's been forsaken by God himself. And so we recognize that both Jairus and this woman, they have need. Now, as we're, you know, considering these different scenarios, I think what we're tempted to do is to kind of say, well, of course, I can acknowledge I have needs. But they're nothing as dramatic as this. They're nothing as, you know, important as this. But I need a parking space, or I need help on my midterm, or I need help with something that, you know, quite frankly, I can do myself. Most of our prayer requests, the things that we can do ourselves, it kind of doesn't matter if the other person even prays or not. It doesn't change everything if God doesn't come through. Right? We can stay on the surface where it's safe. But I would suggest that rather than being just independent and, you know, important and powerful people, we're like a cancer patient who goes and sees an oncologist and asks them for a magazine, maybe an extra pillow, and sends them away. You know, we have deep need. It's not that hard to find it either. It's not some detective mystery, right? We all know that we need help in reconciling with our parents. We know that we need help to overcome that sin that we have struggled with for a decade. We know. We need help in every area of our lives that is outside of our control, and that number is large. It includes our futures and everything that they hold. Right? We need help, but the thing is, we don't believe that anyone can help us. We don't think that anyone, our friends, our God, can make much of a difference. And so we ignore these areas of our lives. We pretend like they don't matter. We pretend like we're over it. We pretend like it doesn't really bother us. And we move on to other things. We think think that maybe our cancer will go away if we just bury it deep enough. And so we turn to the Lord, to others, and we ask them for, you know, the latest issue of people. You know, maybe some of you are really cultured, so you might ask for The Economist or something. Regardless, just trying to forget. Trying to forget the real needs that do exist. Now, Jairus and this woman, they had needs. They had needs that they had tried everything to fix, to fulfill, and it didn't work. And so if Jesus was not there, they would have been tempted to do the same thing. To just say, well, there's nothing you can do about it. To resign themselves to their fate. That is what they would have been tempted to do, but Jesus was there. And you and I can admit that we need help because Jesus is here. Where we can say out loud, I need help. Because Jesus can actually help us. And this is the second phrase of faith. Jesus can help me. Jesus can help me. Now, as Jimmy read, right, Jesus, he heals that woman who had this chronic disease. You know, even he kind of calls her out and he calls her to testify to what has happened. And afterward, he says this amazing thing. In verse 48, he says to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Your faith has made you well. And, you know, as we hear that, I would imagine that we're thinking, wow, you know, her faith must be incredible. Right? She has faith to be cured of an incurable disease, right? She must have faith that moves mountains. Her faith is amazing. And, you know, we all, you know, should aspire to have a faith like hers. But I think it's important for us to consider, you know, what it was that this woman actually knew. Or more precisely, what it was that she did not know. In verse 44, we read that she came up behind Jesus. She touches the fringe of his garment. This woman does not know what Jesus will say if she were to go up to him and ask him to heal her. He doesn't know whether or not he would be willing to do it. In verse 45, Jesus, he asks, you know, who has touched me? And everyone denies it. Everyone, including the woman. The woman has been healed, and she is afraid. She comes eventually trembling to Jesus because she doesn't know whether or not he will be angry with her for touching his robe. And we need to understand this woman does not know that Jesus is the Messiah. But he hadn't revealed himself yet. She doesn't know that Jesus is going to die on the cross for her sin and rise again after 3 days. She doesn't know because nobody knew. His closest friends, his family, the disciples that lived with him for 3 years, they didn't know, even up to the end. They didn't know. This woman is unaware that she is in the presence of the Son of God. She doesn't know. She only knows one thing. She knows, I need help. And Jesus can help me. I have a friend, and I like to call him the King. He's not the King of the Jews, But he is the king of geography. Yeah, it's a lot less prestigious. But he entered a fourth grade geography B, and he was amazing. Okay, he studied for it because I guess that's what kids do for geography Bs. Well, some of them. And to this day, he's my age, so he's 30. To this day, he knows every capital in the world. I don't know how that works. He kept up because obviously, you know, countries and nation states change. He not only knows the capitals of every country in the world, he actually knows which countries border one another. So if you tell him like Kazakhstan, then he'll tell you what borders it. You could even make up countries just to see if they really exist, and he would be able to tell you. He knows an amazing amount of, you know, geographical information. And so, yeah, I mean, that's amazing. I mean, it's kind of insane, but it's also amazing, right? And, you know, it's important for us to understand, God is not hosting a geography bee. He's not administering the MCAT. God is not saying, you need to know everything about me. You need to know every single nuance of everything that I am. You need to know the mysteries that, you know, began before time. You need to understand things that your finite brain cannot handle. You need to know everything before you come to me. You need to have it all figured out. But that is not what Jesus is saying. This woman knew one thing. And as we consider, as we are honest enough to admit our real needs, as we come face to face with the actual limits of our own finite, small power, we don't need to know everything. We need to know that Jesus. We need to know that though we are unable, and though our circumstances are impossible, the Son of God speaks life, and He is able. The scriptures, they recognize that life is messy. Right? The life of faith is challenging. It's not easy. Things may be put into very black and white categories. But black and white doesn't make living it easier. Our third phrase of faith is, I don't understand. I don't understand. Now remember in our passage, Jairus is the person who approaches Jesus first. He comes, he falls, he begs. And Jesus, he comes with him. Now as Jairus is trying to hurry along because his daughter is on the brink of death, right, Jesus, he stops to ask who touched him. Right, and Peter's kind of like, there's a whole crowd here. Of course someone touched you. Let's get going. We have to hurry. Right? And Jairus is thinking the same thing. We have to hurry. And then Jesus decides, no, I have to pursue this. And so he has this conversation with this woman. And you know, throughout it, Jairus is just wondering, what is happening? We need to go. And as you know, Jesus is talking with this woman, Jairus' greatest fear is realized. Someone from his house comes and says, your daughter is dead. Do not bother the teacher any longer. Jairus has just lost the most important person in his life. She's a child. In his heart, I would imagine the man is shrieking. He's asking God, why? Why her? Why not me? Why couldn't Jesus have hurried? Why did it have to be too late? We assume that people of faith are people who know all the answers. People of faith are always learning these insightful lessons. We know what God is doing and why he does things and why our lives are the way that they are. We have no questions because we have faith. That's not true. It's not true. We have questions. We wonder why. And these are not trivial questions. These are the kinds of questions that cut at our hearts. Questions that wound us, even as we consider them. Now that I have a wife and a son, it's easy to worry. It's easy to wonder about the future. Now, I used to say all the time, what's the worst thing that could happen? And people didn't like it when I said that to them. But I think a lot of times, I meant it. Kind of like, what's the worst thing that could happen? And I think in most areas even of my own life, what's the worst thing that could happen, right? But when I consider my wife and my son, I don't like that question. I don't like that question. Yesterday, my wife went to Barona. No, she does not have a gambling problem, as far as I know. She went to meet her old coworkers. One of them had, free coupons for the buffet or something like that. And so, she wanted to continue her friendship with them, so she went to go meet them. And she was a little late in coming back. And, I wasn't panicking or anything, but the thought did cross my mind. She's pretty late. I hope nothing happened. The roads are windy and, it's late and this and that. And, as it turned out, I just underestimated how much she could eat. She was just at the buffet longer than I had anticipated. And, that's cool, right? But the fact of the matter is, there are no guarantees. There are none. Right? Things happen. Accidents happen. Disease happens. There is a large number of devastating things that are absolutely outside of our control. And so we have questions. Now I wonder, what's going to happen in the future? I wonder, am I always going to be able to provide for my family in the way in which they deserve? And I wonder, as God leads, where will he send us? What will we do? And will my children be safe? And will my family be safe? And there are not concrete answers to those questions. I want to know God's plan. I want to know his timeline. I don't just want to know what might be or what's going to happen, 10 years from now. I want to know all the steps in between. I want to know exactly what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, how it's going to happen. I want everything. That's not the way it works. we will never get all of the answers that we want. Because a lot of times the answers just provoke more questions. And God is not interested in us having omniscience . Apparently, that's not the most important thing for us. Amidst our questions, amidst our confusion, amidst even our suffering, when we don't understand, when we don't know everything, there are still things that we can hold on to. And it's those truths, those certainties, that ultimately matter. What matters is not that I can control every second of my life. What matters is that when I don't know what's happening, when I can't control anything, when I am out of options, the Son of God cares for me. The Son of God is my shepherd. The fourth phrase of faith is Jesus will take care of me. Jesus will take care of me. Now we understand, as we go deeper in our relationship with God, that faith is not a matter of propositions. It's not just a matter of living in a certain way or of having a particular outlook on life. Faith is relational. Faith is a matter of trust. Faith is a matter of trust. My son, he loves bananas. He calls them bananas, and every morning he points at them until I give him one. And he can eat. He can eat two bananas on his own. He's pretty good at sharing, but he doesn't need to share to finish it. And after he finishes two, he points again. He can still eat more. And, you know, I don't give him more because that's a lot of bananas to eat in one morning, right? He's got to diversify a little bit. And he wants a third banana, and I tell him no, and I just try to distract him or give him something else. Now, there are two ways that he can think about this. One way for him to think about it is to say, my daddy is a hateful dictator, and he is standing between me and my one true love, bananas. Right? That's one way you can think about it. And there's another way that he can think about it. The second way is to think, I don't understand what he's doing. I don't understand why he doesn't just give me the banana. And when he says words like constipation, I don't get it. It's confusing. I don't know what's happening. But, I do know that he's my daddy. I know he's not out to get me. I know he doesn't take pleasure in my pain. I know that he takes care of me. I know that he loves me. The love of Christ is everywhere in this passage. Jairus comes and he begs, and Jesus, in compassion, goes with him. Jesus is a busy man. He is busy saving the world. And he goes with him. The woman who had the issue of blood, she is ready to flee anonymously, but Jesus holds her up so that he can tell her. He can call her daughter, so she can be accepted, so that she can be sent away, not in fear, but in peace. As Jairus is about to despair at the news of his daughter's death, Jesus is quick to speak, and he says, "Do not fear, only believe." As Jesus approaches this child, he says to her, "Child, arise." The words that he uses are words that a father would say to his daughter in the morning. He's essentially saying, "Honey, it's time to get up." See, we are tempted to doubt the love of God every day. We wonder whether or not he could love people like us. Right? People who doubt. People who wonder, is this all in my head? Am I making this up? Can he love people who hurt? Those who we say we love the most. People who treat family and friends worse than we treat strangers. It's the love of God for us. We look at our circumstances and we ask, is this it? Is this all the love of God is good for? Is he punishing me? Is he against me? When we are tempted to doubt, we need to stop. While we were still sinners, enemies of God, while we were at war with God, he sent his son. He sent his son, who he knew we would reject. The Son of God was mocked. The one whose glory is unimaginable. The one who created everything. The one whose will we depend upon for our next breath. We mocked him. We betrayed him. We tortured him. And we killed him. And he rose. He rose on the third day, and he did not rise and leave us behind. He raises us up with him. He shares his glory, his inheritance, his victory with those who wanted nothing to do with him. You and I may not know everything there is to know about God. But we know that we need help. We need help. And Jesus is saying,
I can help you.
We might not understand our circumstances. We might not know everything about our futures. We might not know what God is doing, where He is, or if He's present at all. But what the cross tells us is that the Son of God withheld nothing from us. That Jesus is not against us, He is for us. And He is able and He is certain to work all things for the good of His people. I don't have answers for most of your questions. I don't know why. Things have to be the way that they are in different areas of your lives. But God is clear. He will take care of you. He is the Good Shepherd. He will not run away when it gets hard. He will not leave or forsake you. Finish what he started. And even if you can't know everything, to tell you that he loves you, he will take care of you and those who you love. This is the word of God. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for His name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever.